Our sponsor today is none other than our Patreon members. You folks are bringing swords and HEMA to listeners worldwide, so thank you. To support our work and receive exclusive benefits, visit patreon.com/swordwomen. Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode, we speak to knife and sword maker Stephanie Aiuto from Brooklyn, New York, USA. We discuss the challenges of the trade, how she got into the art, and the future that the craft holds. The episode was recorded on the 5th of September 2021 on Instagram Live.
Hey.
Hello! How are you doing today?
I'm great. Lovely to see you. Thank you for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so whereabouts in the USA are you?
So I'm located in Brooklyn, so New York City.
Oh, nice. So, yeah, how's it been with the hurricane?
The initial hurricane wasn't so bad, but a couple of days ago, because, you know, the ground was so flooded with water to begin with, we had a serious, you know, rain, and there was nowhere for the water to go. So that's what caused all the massive floods. It's been havoc on our, you know, transportation system, but we'll get by.
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's been in all the news and everything, so I just wanted to sort of ask how it was going. So you're a knife and sword maker, but what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid? Was it this?
I mean, I don't really know that this was something you could do when I was a kid. I think, you know, I went through a couple of different, you know, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be someone who makes Lego for a living. So like there was a lot of what I wanted to be. But yeah, I didn't know that, you know, blacksmithing was something that you can do really up until pretty recently. I thought it was something that, you know, went away years ago. But, you know, thinking back on it, my parents, they had been looking at old like home TV, like, you know, videotapes that we've been taking over, like holidays, birthdays, mm-hmm. all that stuff. And apparently, anytime I had like a tool belt or like a set of like, you know, my first workshop stuff, I would be over the moon, be like, this is the coolest present ever. So clearly this started a while ago.
So making stuff was always going to be on the cards.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. You know, we always, in our family, you know, we promoted creativity, any sort of project we had at school where we could make something, that was always my favorite type of project. So really working with my hands has always been, you know, something I've enjoyed.
So like making stuff, would you say you're a creative, artistic person as well?
Yes, I enjoy making stuff. I enjoy, you know, producing art, whether that's with knives and swords or, you know, every now and then cosplay for like Comic-Con or like just really in-depth themed dinner parties, that kind of stuff. You know, I try to be as creative as I can whenever I can be.
People are like, nerds will always try and sort of out fellow nerds and say, you're a massive nerd, like when they say stuff like that. But really, it's just because we're all creative and we all have like a passion for,
exactly. You know,
whether it's making stuff or connecting to the past or just having fun and expressing ourselves. I guess it's all kind of the same thing. So how did you become a knife and sword maker? What was the story?
It's a bit of a long journey on that one. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, this has been kind of in the works since I was a kid. Whenever we would travel, go to Europe, you know, we would see museums and castles, and whereas my family was like, yes, let's go see the art in the regular museum, I'd be like, no, let's see the armory in the castle. Because these things were, I mean, functionally deadly weapons, but just beautifully crafted. And I've always been slightly drawn to that. You fast forward a couple of years, and in my teens, I was actually a very competitive fencer. Not HEMA, more of the Sabre Olympic style. Mm-hmm. You know, I trained every day in the city, would travel the world on weekends, going to different World Cups. And it was a pretty big part of my life. Unfortunately, in my early 20s, through just whether it be series of injuries or wear and tear, I've actually eroded away the cartilage in my toes.
Oh, damn.
So, yeah, it's kind of, you know, annoying and in the moment, very sad and pressing. But when my friends went to the 2012 and then 2016 Olympics, and I was like, oh, I wish I had something. My mom, she, you know, always looking out for me, was like, you need a new passion. You need to find something. And she found...
Sorry, you were set to become an Olympic level fencer.
You never know. You never know. I was training with people who go to the Olympics. 2012 would have been a huge push for me. I don't think I would have been actually ready for that. But mm-hmm. had no injuries happen, you never know. You never know. And mm-hmm. had I continued training, 2016 may have been a possibility. Mm-hmm. You know, you are very dedicated and you train with the best talent and everyone wants to be the best at something.
Yeah.
But, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, you got to move on.
Yeah.
So it was right after the 2016 Olympics that my mom was like, you need something in your life. Mm-hmm. And she found me a 2-day make your own knife class, trying to bring in some of the passion for blades. If you can't swing them, make them. Mm. And that's what kind of started this all.
That's really cool. If you can't swing them, make them. So when you went to this 2-day course that your mum got for you, mm-hmm. what did you make? Do you remember?
I do. I have them here. It was, so the first thing we did was we made a simple S-hook just so everyone could work with a little bit of mild steel. It's easier to move and just get basic, you know, blacksmithing principles. And then we were given a piece of metal about this big and just told to make a knife, you know. As you do. Not everyone was able to make one, and I did not make, I mean, I like to say I made a knife-like object. It's ugly, but I was able to make it.
That's cool.
You know, there's a million things wrong with it, but, and even though, like, the class itself wasn't the most in-depth class, it sparked my curiosity. I had fun doing it, and I wanted to learn how to do it correctly. So that's when I found Theo Nez. He, you know, I was literally just like, okay, Brooklyn knife makers classes. I just happened to find him as a separate offering. I didn't know anything about him, just his website. He made nice things. I was like, all right, let's take a chance. And then the first knife I made with him was this.
Oh, that's a knife.
That's nice. So you can see the difference between something that's just make a knife, no instruction, and actual, this is how you make a knife, and this is how you do it the right way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a blast. Theo and I, you know, we hit it off instantly, both huge nerds. And, you know, one class led to another, started teaching for him. And now I'm just, you know, making commissions and doing my own thing.
So you're not just making knives and swords, you're teaching other people how to do it now.
I like to help as much as I can. Mm-hmm. So we do run a school. It's owned by Theo, the Nez Forge Blacksmithing School. It's in Brooklyn and Industry City, if you happen to be nearby. Mm-hmm. There's Theo's obviously the owner. There's a few regular teachers. And then whenever I can, I'm happy to do a herb chopper class or help fill in. Sorry, my cat just says hello. you know, I'm always, I enjoy teaching. I enjoy sharing this knowledge. So even if other teachers are in there, chances are on Saturdays, I'm poking my head in, watching them, making sure everyone's learning and having fun.
So is this, I mean, you have a day job too, right?
I do. I am a director of advanced analytics within a media marketing firm. Mm-hmm. So very different things.
So by night, you're a sword maker. That's pretty cool. So is that evenings and weekends you're making stuff, or is it just the weekends?
It's just Saturdays.
Saturdays, yeah.
I work pretty long hours during the week. And I'd love it if I could, after my job, go and work in the shop. But I want to respect the school's time and hours. That's a lot of time when we have classes. And, you know, too many people in such a small place, it's not, first of all, it's not COVID safe. Second of all, if you have too many cooks in the kitchen, someone's going to get burned. So I want to be respectful for the school space. So Saturday's my day. Maybe sometimes Sunday as well.
Do you think you'd ever make your own workshop on your own premises?
You know, that's the dream, to have your own property, have your own shop in your garage. You know, right now with apartment living, I don't think my landlord would really appreciate me putting a forge in the apartment. But one day I'd like to have my own studio.
Yeah. So what have you made recently? Show us. Show and tell.
Sure. So the most recent finished projects, you know, you might have seen them on my Instagram already, but I've been working on a couple of kitchen knives. So I have this little guy.
Ooh.
And this little guy.
Cool.
Do a lot of kitchen knives because that's generally what people buy in New York City. You know, we really don't have a huge amount of hunters and hikers. So a lot of what we happen to sell is, you know, what people want to use.
So the stuff you make and sell, is that, do you frequently find that that's what you end up giving people as gifts?
Well, so it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, when I took my first class with Theo, I made that knife and that was for me. But then I wanted to continue taking classes and learning how to do stuff. But there's only so many knives one person needs before it begins to get a little weird. So every project I made for the next 2 years, well, yes. And hey, I mean, you'll see, like, eventually.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. So I wanted to continue learning. So I was like, okay, anything I make for the next, you know, year or two, I'll give to someone. So I made a cheese knife that had a goat's head in the handle. That went to my mom. I did a straight edge razor for my brother-in-law, so on and so forth. So I've done a lot of gifts as well.
What do you know about the superstition with knives as gifts?
Well, I mean, we know the Italian superstition where you can't give knives for a wedding gift at all. So I know that. Are there other no-nos?
Well, I don't know if this is just a UK thing or what, but the one I've heard is that knives cut friendship. So if you give a knife to someone as a gift, they should give you some money for it, even if it's just a penny. Just so they're buying it from you. So it's not a gift kind of thing. But that's one sort of superstition that I know about knives. I hadn't heard that one about the Italian one about you mustn't give knives as a
No, no, you can't give knives for an Italian wedding. No, no, you cannot. Because that's what leads to murder each other.
So. Yeah. they'll get them somehow, I'm sure. Kitchen knives, being in a sort of urban setting, kitchen knives are like the most popular thing that people are after. You don't really get people going hiking, as you say. People don't really want sort of pocket knives, utility knives. But you also make swords, so tell us about that.
Right, so I do make swords, not as many as I would like, just because, again, I can only do this on Saturdays and I need to make the most of my, you know, my time in the shop. But so I have the first sword I ever made here with me. It is a wakizashi. So let me just step back a little bit so you can get it in frame. So this was pretty fun to make. It is wrapped in the traditional Edo method with same behind. And then with the tsuba, and again, first sword, so please forgive me. I did kind of a tiger.
Cute.
In the night, and you can see behind the clouds. So
that is so awesome. So what's the tsuba made of?
So the tsuba is made out of copper. And then essentially what I did was I drew on the pattern and then etched around it. And that's how you have the copper moon shining through and the tiger shining through, but the rest is black. That's just a magic black compound that we put on.
Cool. Just to go back to, like, when you said you were told to just make a knife on your course, like, they gave you you made the S-hook. And then you were given a little, like you say, a little block of metal like this, and they said, make a knife.
Yep.
Did they not give you any instruction? You just like just went at it and like this is what we're going to do.
There were, if I recall correctly, it's been some time. There were between 8 and 12 of us in this class. And there was really one teacher. So the teacher, I'm guessing, was most concerned about making sure no one hurt themselves.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, which is super important. Safety first, always. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it was just, you know, you made what you could. Some people, I mean, this was a carbon steel. What carbon steel? They never told us. Yeah. So we don't know, you know, if it's 1095, ADCRV2, we had no idea. Mm-hmm. Some metals are much harder to work than others. So some people were just, they were stuck. They couldn't pull out the steel at all. I was determined to make something long enough that like I could actually hold it and cut with it. Again, this is a piece of, you know, crap comparatively, but I really wanted to see how far I could draw this out. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, and a lot of people, their knives broke, you know, when they went to go drill through the holes, it was too skinny. It broke. Mm-hmm. We were given just enough knowledge as to not hurt ourselves.
Yeah. I guess like 2 days, 12 people, that's not really a lot of time with the instructor to get like really good grasp of what you're supposed to do. So
right.
It's kind of like a sink or swim thing, I guess. It's like just try it out and see what happens kind of thing. If you really like, come back for more, I guess.
And that's the difference. I mean, we offer at our school a 2-day make your own knife class, mm-hmm. but to make sure that all of our students produce something that's worthwhile, we only offer 3 different types of designs. And it's a very like standard, we do this, then we do this, then we do this. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, is annoying because you don't have the students being able to be like, well, I want to make this type of knife. No, yeah. It's, you're going to make this and it's going to be a great knife.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's always a limitation in some ways, isn't there? Like, you know, there's not enough time to do all the sort of stuff. Otherwise, the course would cost a hell of a lot more, I would imagine.
Right.
So, and then when you made your wakizashi, how did that go? How did you go about that? Was someone there guiding you? Did you research how to make it by yourself? Or how did that all come together?
So... before I started on the sword, again, you know, working with Theo, cause we do offer more, customizable classes, small, medium, large knife classes, sword classes. We don't let novices take them because it can be very disheartening if you don't know what you're doing and seeing how long it actually ends up taking. You know, a sword class that we offer is 16 sessions over the course of a year. You know, people get upset that they're not done yet.
Yeah.
But yes, by the time I started the sword class, I had done maybe 3 knives, 4 knives under my belt. And again, you know, taking it with Theo, I was like, I want to do this, sketched out the design. But at this point I kind of knew what I needed to do. It was just it's a lot bigger. So if I ever had a question at this point, I would go to Theo and I'd say, hey, how do I do this? You know, show me this technique. And he would demonstrate a little bit and then let me take over. But halfway through making the sword, he's like, you don't need to take classes anymore. You're set. but to this day, like, I'm far from knowledgeable on all things blacksmithing. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best part about working with other blacksmiths in this shop. If we have questions and someone's done something similar, you know, we collaborate, we work together, mm-hmm. we make sure that everyone's producing the best work they can.
You got a little hive mind to draw upon.
Exactly. It's nice.
Yeah, that's really cool. And do you think that the average person underestimates the number of hours it takes to make a blade?
Oh, yeah. I think there's 2 or 3 big underestimating points. One mm-hmm. is just how difficult it is to move metal.
Mm-hmm.
we've had MMA fighters who are like big and jacked and like, you know, 6'5", and they're not used to swinging a hammer in the way that we do. And so they'll get wiped because they're just not used to it. So there's a big underestimation there about just how easy it is to move metal.
Right.
Then there's the, okay, well, forging actually is the quickest part of this whole process. The rest of it, you know, the fine detail work, sorry, my cat's gonna jump on my desk.
That's okay.
The fine detail work of fit and finish. That's where the majority of your time is spent, making sure things fit together perfectly, making sure that, you know, you've shaped your handle well. If you're working with bolsters or guards, slotting them, it takes so much time and perfection, and the ability to just sit there with a file for an hour doing this. You know, that's where most of the work comes into play.
I remember speaking to people who did there's a guy here in the UK called Owen Bush who does courses. And I think they're like a week long. You spend a week with him in small groups making whatever it is you want to make. And the people that I know that have been there, they said that they were surprised that they spent most of their time polishing.
Oh, yeah.
There was so much polishing. I thought I'd be like, you know, beating metal. And like you say, you think that that's going to be the longest part, but it's the working, the cold, finished, like you say, the finishing that takes mm-hmm. the time.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, you have the shaping the handle and all of the work that goes into a sword beyond the knife, beyond the actual steel itself. But then to make it look nice and not just be a forged finished, you're polishing, as you said, the hand sanding. You can spend between 8 and 20 hours hand sanding something. Just depends on what finish you're looking for. And people don't think of that. They don't, they're like, well, isn't there a machine? Like, no.
No, you are the machine.
and so, I mean, let me rephrase. There are polishing machines that you can do or use. We don't use them in our forge because mm-hmm. one of the most common injuries is that it will take your blade and because it's spinning at such high force, either shoot it into the wall, have it bounce back into you, or shoot it directly into you. And that's the most common cause of death or injury in this field. So we do not use them. Everything's done, all the hand sanding, it's done by hand.
Yeah.
No machine polishing.
Yeah. Do you blame the movies for that kind of misrepresentation?
The only thing I blame movies for, it's a pet peeve of mine and a few of my friends. When people go to sterilize a knife to like cut something or cauterize a wound and they heat up the blade so it's cherry red, they've now destroyed that knife. They've taken away the heat treat. It is never going to be a good weapon. It will bend, it will break. That is what pisses me off the most.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So overheating finished knives unnecessarily, yeah, to cauterize a wound.
Yeah.
So we're just coming up to the halfway mark. There's 8 folks watching us at the moment. We got a question in our questions box. So that's what I was going to say to everyone who's watching. Stephanie, tell us all about making knives and swords. If you've got any questions about how to make knives and swords that you want to ask us, ask Stephanie, please hit that button at the bottom of your screen. It looks like a question mark. There's a number 1 on it at the moment. Type in your question and we will read it out. So let me just go. I'm just going to search back through the comments here in case, because sometimes people throw the comments down in here. Shadow and Swords. So my friend Shadow says, we're definitely all nerds. Yeah, I agree. We're a good company here. And she said, then they say, that needs to be on a shirt. If you can't swing them, make them. I agree. You should do that for your forge. That should be your forge t-shirt. and a banner over the door. Let's have a look. Right, let's read out this question. Oh, there's 2 questions. So, first one. Kenjutsu sparring. Do you whetstone polish and do you sharpen your blades?
So everything that we make in our forge is sharpened unless the client specifically says do not sharpen. Mm-hmm. The one exception to this is when I make champagne sabers, I do not sharpen. Just because if you've ever done some saberage, you know that you're not supposed to use the sharpened end. And I want to eliminate that from the equation. And also when it comes to drinking and swords or knives, just eliminate anything that could potentially cause injury. But everything.
Anyone who's listening or watching, we're talking about sabrage which is when you take a champagne bottle and you take a saber, or any, it could be anything actually.
Anything.
People do it with spoons.
Yeah.
Or a burger flipper, and you just slide it along the neck of the bottle, and it, the pressure of the champagne makes the top of the neck pop off, and it's very fancy. I imagine people want those for weddings and things.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I made one recently for a gentleman who owns a wine bar. So it's something that, you know, he can do if he wants to there, or, you know, let clients do. I believe Sabrege became famous for Napoleon's army. I think they were the ones that were like, yeah, let's pop some bottles.
Yeah. I think they had so much champagne that they got bored of opening them conventionally and decided to be more fancy about it and flashy and use their swords. So that's where that came from.
So fun fact there. But yes, everything else is sharpened. We can sharpen in a variety of ways. We can use wet stones. If, you know, a customer wants it sharpened that way, we'll absolutely do it that way. But we also, we have a bunch of different grinding machines. And, you know,
sorry, just tell us what whetstone sharpening is, because not all of us may know what that is.
So there are these different stones that have different grades of coarseness in it. So you can have everything from 120 to 12,000 in terms of like how fine this grade is. And what you do is you take this porous block and soak it in water. And then essentially you're working off of this kind of pool of water, the stones in there, and you're taking your knife and in a very even pressured and maintaining a certain angle, sliding it across this stone to get the perfect edge geometry and sharpness that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's the old school method. Mm-hmm. Works very well. But using a grinding machine and having, again, even pressure, same angle, you'll get the same results.
Okay, I got a little bit confused there because of the use of the word wet. I believe that the person asking the question actually meant wet with an H, didn't they? As in a whetstone.
So, haha.
Or is that something else? Because whetstone is like literally a sharpening stone, isn't it?
So there is a sharpening stone. So you can have a dry stone or a wet stone.
Okay.
It just depends on which stone you're working with. We would prefer to work with a stone that is soaked in water just because it works better for us, honestly. It's just something that, you know, and this is the case with a lot of different techniques that you'll find in blacksmithing. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, so many ways to skin a cat. It's whichever way that you're most comfortable with. So some people just prefer to work with different methods.
Right, gotcha. Oh, we got four questions in the question box. Oh my goodness. So the next question, Foxhound was the next one, I believe. Foxhound 027, what is the best steel for sword making? I see lots of numbers and I don't know what they mean.
Very fair question. There's a lot of different high carbon steels. And even some new stainless steels that people are trying to make swords with. And really what you're looking for, because all of the different numbers are essentially just different brand names, it's talking about the different alloy compositions within that carbon steel. For swords, I prefer working with ADCRV2 just because I'm very comfortable with the science behind the heat treat. So I know exactly how to thermocycle it, what temperature to quench it, and then what temperature to temper it afterwards. It produces a very flexible sword, which is what you're looking for. Because again, when you hit something, you want that, you know, kinetic energy to bend and not break. Mm-hmm. When it comes to making shorter knives or knives, you know, kitchen knives, I tend to work with, if I can, ADCRV2 just because I like working with it. But 1095 also, you know, it holds a killer edge, and it's, you know, very reliable for working on. You'll have some other types of steels that are, as you forge, it actually gets harder. So we tend not to work with those because, as I mentioned before, with students, they're not used to swinging a hammer. They get tired after 4 hours. So we try to keep steels that are easy to work with and that we know how to work their temper cycles.
Gotcha. Cool. So, let's see what else we got in here. Sound Fettler has three questions. First one, how many of the people who take your course come back for additional training or continue making items?
Interesting question. I'm sure Theo would have the exact knowledge because he, you know, he does all the books. But generally speaking, the people who take the intro classes, like the pure intro classes, the trinkets class where you make coat hangers or S-hooks or whatever, or bottle openers, they might come back and take a utility knife class now that they know how to swing a hammer. People, the majority of people who take a utility knife class, they might take one more, or they might, or a very small percentage actually go, you know what, I really like this. I want to work my way up to my own kitchen knife, my own, you know, axe for cutting wood. They'll have a specific project in mind and we'll take that additional class. And then our special few come back continually, like, I want to make this, I want to make this. Those are the people who eventually become apprentices or teachers themselves after a couple of years.
Oh, so it sounds similar to HEMA, actually. Like, you know, who goes to the beginner's course, ends up, you know, sticking with it. What's the attrition like? Yeah, it's a similar kind of story. I'm sure it's the same in any pastime. You know, you get people who drop in and go, yeah, I've done that now, on to the next hobby.
Yep.
The people who are completely kind of hooked and absorbed by it and just want to keep going.
Absolutely, yeah.
Next question, also Sound Fettler. How expensive is it to set up a small forge at home?
So,
something
if you do your research and know what you're doing, you can get a coffee can forge relatively cheap. Literally, you're using an old big coffee can, insulating it properly, using a small butane torch that feeds in. You can do it. You know, if you have a, if you found an anvil or inherited one, that's the, like, that's one of the most expensive things, anvils. They're really expensive right now. I think they're going between $5 to $10 a pound, which would probably, sorry, I do not know how to do the math to make this into European. Just, they're expensive.
They're a lot. Anvils are heavy. They're a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, so that's going to be the most expensive part of it. But you could probably have a working forge between $200 and $500. And really, all you're looking at is the coffee can forge, a pair of tongs, one hammer, and a surface that you can hit on. Obviously, the better setup you have and the better materials that you're working with, the better knives you're going to produce. A lot of people start out with railroad spikes because they can find them. Mm-hmm. But railroad spikes are not high carbon steel. They do not make a great knife. They look cool, but that's it. So, you know, you can start playing around. If you're comfortable working with your hands, mm-hmm. and you have the space to do it safely, you can absolutely get started on your own. But I would highly recommend taking a class first from someone who knows how to do this, because mm-hmm. this isn't leather work, this isn't pottery, this is very dangerous.
the danger of it is filtering through quite frequently. I'm getting the message here. It's you got to be really, really into this.
Yeah.
Final question from Sound Fettler. Are there any books or references that you recommend to check out with regards to knife/sword making? What's the Bible?
I mean, there are several books in the market that you can get, and a lot of them are fairly old, fairly outdated, and due to the nature of historical smithing, there are some terms in there that are not PC, and because of that, like, I don't like to necessarily recommend them. Instead, I would recommend going on Blade forums and really going into the knife making community, because the current knife making community is about sharing knowledge. answering questions, you can get, you know, a discussion of 5-6 different smiths telling you what works for them and suggesting, oh, okay, you want to try this method? Okay, well, I have, you know, here are some videos that have tried that method. And I think that's a much better way for you to get acquainted with the craft as it is today.
So like a live knowledge from an actual person is probably the best way to learn. Having spoken to other blade makers, like the message that I get sort of as an outsider is that blacksmithing, bladesmithing is so nuanced and so varied. And like, it's like science. You can't just be a scientist anymore. You're a specialist and you know your thing. It's hard to know all the things
Absolutely.
That they're doing in blacksmithing. So like just having that living working knowledge, that community sounds like is a really important resource to have.
Absolutely. And I mean, the history with any science or any craft, you know, any new discoveries, most happen because it was an accident. You know, I'm sure the first person that quenched an oil kind of, you know, might have done something accidentally, but that was like, oh wait, these blades are a lot better now. Let's try to do this more frequently. If you're just looking at one person's knowledge or just trying to self-teach, you're missing out on a lot of opportunities to figure out what's worked and what styles you want to bring into your repertoire.
For a few more people joining us, I'll just make sure there's no comments here that we've missed. One more question that has popped up here. Kenjutsu sparring. Who teaches you to wrap the tsuka on your katana wakizashi? Do you craft all of the handle parts?
Cool. So for the wakizashi specifically, we're talking about the Ito wrap. Mm-hmm. So Thea gave me the Ito string. And he showed me the motions of how to do it. And then he's like, great. Now I want you to do a practice run. And so I did one. That took me quite long, maybe like an hour or two, closer to 2 hours. And then after I did that, he's like, great. Now do it. He like unwrapped it. He said, do it again. That was my thing. But what he was really doing was A, I got better the second time, but B, the string itself stretches every time you wrap it. And because you want it to be so snug that like it sticks and nothing else needs to be glued down for it to hold shape, you know, for many years, you want to keep putting it under tension, keep wrapping it, unwrapping it, wrapping it, unwrapping it. So I did that 3 times and finally he's like, okay, this is going to be your final one. So that's how that went. And I'm glad for it because it's still holding shape today. It'll hold shape for a while. But as far as the other half of that question, so we try to make as much as we can, by ourselves. It's A, fun, and B, where the artistry comes in. So, most recently, you know, with different types of handle materials, sometimes I will source the wood from other people. So like this, handle material came from Rob's Wildwood. Nice. I mean, again, it came in knife scales and I shaped it and did everything, but I just happened to like the Ambonia burl that he made here. We make our own hybrid handle materials. So we'll take wood, stabilize it, and then with the cutoffs, the live edges, what we'll do is then we'll fill in an epoxy resin pour in with colors, and that will make a hybrid material. If you look on my Instagram, you'll see a few different pieces with that. So we'll make those, or we'll stabilize our own wood sometimes. When it comes to mosaic pins that we'll sometimes use, we do not make our mosaic pins, we buy them. That's just because there are people's jobs that all they do is they make cool patterns, and that's awesome. For those of you who are unaware of what a mosaic pin is.
Solid. Oh, okay. That is pretty.
Yeah.
So that's the pin through the handle of the knife.
Right.
It itself is quite decorative.
Compared to this, which is just a pin.
Yeah.
This, yeah. So you can get different patterns. I know it's a little blurry. I'm sorry about that. And then, so for things like, I'm going to show the sword again. the different components of this, the texture of habaki, all of this stuff. You know, we don't make copper, but we take it and shape it, the butt cap. So that's all done by hand. But every now and then we'll make some designs, sketch them out. Theo is wonderful at 3D animation, and we'll, you know, 3D print things every now and then. So that way it's still our design, but it's shaped perfectly so we don't have to spend 5 hours filing a Tang slot, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Making use of modern technology.
Yeah.
There's another question popped up in here. Right. Have you heard of liquid nitrogen quenching? Is it real? Does the blade not shatter? I've not heard of that.
People try things all the time. It is not something that I would attempt. There are way too many variables. And again, it might be a very specific steel type that they're doing this with. Yeah, that's not something that I'm going to play around with. Too many things could go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair. I mean, this is kind of like, you know, blade making is kind of like a science and an art, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the artistic creative side, and there's like the strict discipline of, you know, of technique and practice.
Right.
So similar to fencing, really. So what is the biggest challenge that you think you face in this work?
Are we talking about just, you know, me continuing to be able to do my thing, or just anyone who wants to be a bladesmith?
Well, as a bladesmith, what are the sort of biggest challenges that you've come across as part of the job?
Of course.
I know that's not your job, but it's
No. So I think, you know, there are a couple of hardships. One is your desire to produce your art versus your desire to sell things. A lot of smiths want to make things that speak to them. They want to try new techniques or do something new. But anytime you're working on something for yourself, that's time spent that you're not working towards a commission.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, even people who do this full time, it's, you know, it's your livelihood. So you need to make something that people are willing to buy. Some people do production lines, so they'll make, you know, the same type of knife, maybe 20 of them, handle them differently and sell those as part of a production knife. Some people only do commissions. And then again, like, you know, you might want to make historical weapons, but some person's like, no, I want this anime sword, make it. You're like, okay. So I think that's one of the biggest things. It's exploring your art versus keeping your wallet flush.
Yeah, putting bread on the table.
Yeah. There is the joke that the best way to make $1 million blacksmithing is to start with $2 million. So
yeah, whittle it down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you know, like you say, you've got, you know, do I make things that people want me to make? Do I make the things that I want to make, which is going to cost me money? Mm-hmm. But what makes you keep coming back? What makes you want to keep going every Saturday?
It's the most fun. I mean, look, some people think that yoga will relax them. Some people think meditation's the thing. For me, beating metal, again, and I've said this before, it's so dangerous that the only time I don't have a million thoughts going through my head of like, how's my family? How's my work? All that. The only time I'm just purely in the moment is when I'm working in the forge. I have to make sure that I'm not going to hurt myself, that I'm not going to mess up what I'm working on. So it's the only time I'm truly present in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I get to make cool things. And like, what's better than that?
Yeah. So it's like, it takes your mind off of your everyday sort of worries. It's like a form of meditation in itself, I guess. Like you say, mm-hmm. beat a piece of metal, staying safe and all the rest of it.
Exactly. It's the forging aspect definitely helps get out any aggression. You'll never find someone who's like, you know, quick to anger when they're a blacksmith just because, you know, they don't have any more aggression left. But then even when you're when you're you know, grinding and shaping your blade, you're just so focused in making sure that you have no slight movements and you're keeping a plane. You know, it's very zen. I don't know. It's my yoga.
an even temper. Sorry, terrible pun.
No, but that's the pun. That's the joke. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's just talk about representation in the community. You're the first woman swordsmith, metalsmith. I've interviewed a woman sword maker who makes wooden swords, but you're the first woman I've spoken to who makes metal weapons. What are your thoughts on representation in the community? Like, when you, for example, when you signed up for that course, were you the only femme presenting person there, or you know, is it a boys club, or is it a bit more representative of the society that we live in?
So, and again, being that we're in New York, our shop is a little bit different, mm-hmm. but you know, generally speaking, the community is very older man dominated. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, who we get in our classes, we do have a mix of you know, men in their 20s and 30s, fathers and sons. We have a couple of women who come through, but it's, you know, not as often as we'd like. The funny thing is, when we do get like a husband and wife combo coming in to take a class, the woman always produces better work because she follows direction.
It's follows instructions.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she's paying attention. She wants to make something. She knows she's not naturally going to be good at this and tries. But that's besides the point. The real thing is, you know, this stems from how often when you were growing up did girls, you know, go crazy about shop? You know, my dad, we built things as a kid. You know, yes, I had dolls, and I built my doll a desk. I built my doll a treasure chest, you know, with my dad. This was something we did. I don't think that happens very frequently. And it's a shame because, you know, you'll get a whole group of people just missing out on a cool experience or opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the next 10 to 20 years, we might start to see more smiths in the field. And I hope so. You know, this should be something that everyone should try out. All you need is, you know, a setup or access to a setup and just a passion for making cool things.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's become really popular lately in the last?
Sorry? Day?
Do you think swords, bladesmithing has become really popular lately? That's the impression I'm getting, at least.
I mean, you do tend to see ebbs and flows. I think everyone was kind of sword crazy when, you know, The Princess Bride came out, Three Musketeers, Star Wars. I don't know a kid who didn't play with, you know, lightsabers made out of paper towel rolls or whatever. So that definitely has kept, you know, people focused on swords. As far as sword making, you know, we're in an area where you have shows like Forged in Fire, and everyone, mm-hmm. you know, suddenly wants to try something cool, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's because they want to just make a knife, make their own chef's knife, or, you know, make a sword. It's something that is sparking a curiosity in many people that wouldn't have even thought about it before.
Yeah. There's so many, like, there's Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings, and, mm-hmm. like, they've all got swordsmithing scenes in them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it must, you know, spark, sorry, another pun, some kind of curiosity amongst people. What advice would you give to someone who is sort of thinking, I really want to get into this? If you could go back to yourself, what would you say to yourself?
Do it quicker. No, honestly, like, just don't be afraid. You know, it's people think that they're gonna struggle because, you know, they've never worked with their hands before, or they don't have the right body type. You know, we've had a 14-year-old girl from Connecticut who is like the size of my finger, you know, total string bean. And she forged harder than like some of like the big 50-year-old guys that we work with, just because she was determined to, and she wasn't afraid to try and fail. Mm. That's another one. Like, do not be determined by messing something up. Literally just last night, I was working on trying to bend some brass to forge to make a guard. And if anyone who works with metal knows, brass really easily breaks when you're trying to bend it. And I like screwed up three things last night. But no matter, that just means that next time I'm there at the shop, I'm gonna just try it a different way. So don't be afraid of failure. If you're curious, just go for it, you know, just try it out. What's the worst thing that happens? You waste an afternoon.
You're not even wasting, you're learning. So, yeah. that was three lessons yesterday. So the fourth time you do it, you've got those three lessons sort of.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So circle back to like when little Stephanie was getting hammers and stuff for toys as a kid. And, you know, you said, I had no idea that this was a thing. I thought that it had died out. Where do you see the future of bladesmithing going?
So a lot of the times people will ask me, oh, is a forged, you know, hand forged thing better than, you know, a commercially produced stamped blade? And there is a train of thought here. For a lot of things that you can get, for what people try to use, things that are done in small production batches, you know, depending on what manufacturer, stamped knives, they're pretty good. Really, the reason why to get something hand forged is A, the artistry, and B, if you know the person, you know the quality behind it. There is no second guessing. So I think that the future of this is really going to be in not necessarily batch production for just like, hey, you know, we're going to be the next, you know, major company that produces, you know, 50,000 knives a month. It's really going to be people who are okay with not making a buck for a while and trying to get into purely artistry. Like you would buy a Picasso, you would buy a Monet. This is going to be, you would buy this Smith's knife because it's worth it far as like a piece of art. And also if you ever needed to defend your house from zombies, you could use that kind of thing. Exactly.
That's what we're training for, right?
That's it. The zombie apocalypse. It's gonna come. We're prepared.
We're all working on our post-apocalyptic skills. You know. Thank you so much for joining me, Stephanie. It's been fascinating. A real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a lot of fun. And yeah, anyone who has any questions, feel free to drop a DM. Happy to answer them. And hopefully you get to try blacksmithing. You know, it'll be fun.
I plan to do it at some point in my life. I'm really looking forward to doing it. Please. Take care. Thank you.
Have a good one. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.